Palantir CEO Alex Karp recently argued that making war crimes constitutional would be good for business.
The more constitutional you want to make it, the more precise you want to make it, the more you're going to need my product. So you keep pushing on making it constitutional. I'm totally supportive of that.
Karp's company, Palantir, sells its technologies to the government to help them better surveil and kill people. So making things like the recent boat strikes in the Caribbean constitutional would mean that the government would need to pay Palantir more money to use more of their products. I mean, guys, in other words, the more innocent people get murdered while floating in the ocean, struggling to stay afloat, well, hey, the better business will be for big tech companies like Palantir. Now, of course, this shouldn't be a surprise coming from a guy who told investors that the rise of the West was not made possible by the superiority of its ideas or values or religion, but rather by its superiority in applying organized violence. But what's even scarier here is that this isn't just one gacked up CEO that loves money and death in equal measure. It's an example of a larger system that is straight up taking over politics in the US and Europe. And without intervention, it seems like they are very much going to get away with it, carrying out a series of proverbial drone strikes on democracy in the process. Do you think democracy still exists? Shout it out in the comments. It's still like, how much? How much is democracy still really a thing when you really think about it? But a new map might actually help us understand what the billionaires are doing and then help us figure out how to critique and resist this new authoritarian system. Okay, so let's take a look at this map and try to get our heads around what's really going on. So one of the hardest things about contemporary politics is that we all basically know that all the assholes are working together to fuck us. But we can't always articulate precisely how they're doing it, which can leave us on the verge of feeling like conspiracy theorists.
And when I open the door, what do I find? There's not a single goddamn desk in that office. There is no Carol in HR.
But this study, the authoritarian stack, maps things out in a way that actually makes sense, especially helpful for visual learners like I am. And if you are watching YouTube, you're probably a visual learner too. Now, the study opens with this. In late July 2025, deep within the Pentagon's bureaucratic machinery, the US Army quietly signed away a piece of its sovereignty. A $10 billion contract with Palantir Technologies, one of the largest in the Department of Defense's history, was framed as a move toward efficiency. It consolidated 75 procurement agreements into a single contract. These are the stakes we're facing here, right? The US government is already outsourcing its core military functions to a company run by alt-right Taika Waititi, a company he started alongside another Silicon Valley sicko who is really obsessed with the Antichrist. But the horrifying and important thing here is that these psychos are just two nodes of an increasingly complex network of power that's been unfolding right underneath our noses. Now, Thiel and Karp are connected with guys ranging from Mark Andreessen to JD Vance to Elon Musk and Donald Trump Jr. Just a bunch of hot guys, just a bunch of good-looking, cool, hot guys, you know, like the Entourage guys, but for a new generation. Now, this map shows us not only the funds and corporations that connect all these guys, but it also shows us their ideological and financial connections. So, for example, we can see that Andreessen espouses the doctrine of techno-accelerationism, and that J.D. Vance's signature ideology is Christian nationalism. Now, this is important as the study shows how these ideologies fuel and then reinforce the tech authoritarian system. Okay, before I show you the full tech authoritarian stack, I wanted to show you an article that I saw today, which exemplifies why the connection between Silicon Valley and Washington is so important and, frankly, so scary. Now, on the day that I'm filming this, President Trump has said he's going to sign an executive order which limits individual states' ability to regulate AI. Some are already calling this order a big giveaway to big tech. And I've been reading the story with the help of this video sponsor, Ground News. Now, Ground News is not only the first ever brand to sponsor this channel, they're also an incredibly useful tool for making sense of so many of the events and stories that I cover here on this channel. You know, it's tempting to just use my social media feed to see what sort of articles that my friends and colleagues are sharing, but this often leaves out important context and framing. And with Ground News, I get to see how a story is being covered across the political spectrum. I get deeper context on who is doing the reporting, and I get to learn about who is funding each news source. Now, this particular story on Trump's executive order on the AI approval process is especially telling in terms terms of how different political factions are interpreting it. Now, Common Dreams, an independent nonprofit news outlet, published a story with the headline, "Watchdog denounces Trump AI order seen as giveaway to big tech billionaire buddies like David Sacks." Now, according to their coverage, Trump's order can be seen as a favor to many of Trump's big donors from the tech industry, and as potentially putting children at risk through removing the ability of individual states to regulate things like AI chatbots. This article quotes the director of Demand Progress as saying that blocking state-level regulations on AI only makes sense if the president's goal is to please the big tech elites who helped pay for his campaign, his inauguration, and his ballroom. Now, to see how the right-leaning media is covering this story, I looked at the New York Post, which frames this executive order as a way to maintain America's competitive edge in the global race to master AI technology. Ground News also shows me that this source is owned by a huge media conglomerate, the Murdoch family. Now, in one account, the rights and safety of individuals seem to be prioritized, while in another, innovation at all costs seems to be the priority. Now, I'm going to talk more about this in a minute, but it's hard to not see the very obvious connection between Silicon Valley interest and political power in this story, which is just one example of many. Now, I find Ground News useful in situations like this, as it can both help me understand the ideology being used to defend these positions, while also showing me precisely who runs and owns these news organizations. And Ground News also keeps me aware of blind spots in my news feed. According to a Duke University study, exposure to these sorts of blind spots can help to moderate positions and reduce issue polarization. So thank you so much again to Ground News for supporting my work. If you want to check it out for yourself and get 40% off the Vantage plan, which is what you see me using right here, you can head to ground.news/Michael Burns or scan my QR code right now. It's a great way to refine your own news consumption while also supporting the work that I'm doing on this channel. Because Ground News is designed for people who want to question narratives, not just simply consume them, which is, you know, the whole thing that we do here on this channel and in videos like this one. So scan the QR code or click the link in the description for 40% off unlimited access with the Vantage plan. Now, according to this study, under the banner of patriotic tech, this new bloc is building the infrastructure of control. Clouds, AI, finance, drones, satellites, an integrated system we call the authoritarian stack. It is faster, ideological, and fully privatized. A regime where corporate boards, not public law, set the rules. So it's not just that these powerful forces are influencing the state, they're literally building their own state, one in which they're the monarchs, and we're just the powerless little subjects. Now, we see this transfer of power from the state to big tech in the number of government personnel who have recently been handpicked by these private companies. This creates a direct pipeline between Silicon Valley and Washington, D.C. Now, we've also recently seen executives from Palantir, Meta, and OpenAI sworn in as lieutenant colonels in the U.S. Army. So next time you thank the troops, make sure you thank people that work at Palantir, Meta, and OpenAI. And just to be clear here, this means that tech guys are increasingly running both the government and the military. Surely this ends well. Whenever I've hung out with tech guys, I think to myself, I wish they ran everything. Now, this obviously sucks, but what's more important right here is to see the pipeline by which this power has been established and which allows it to expand in a seemingly infinite loop. Now, as they outline this loop in the study, they begin with ideology, which in this case often means a mix of techno-accelerationism, Christian nationalism, and light fascism. Those ideological commitments lead to investments by venture capital in technologies and companies that can serve those ideological goals. Now, through a process of state capture, these companies use contracts to gain state power. And then this new state power continues to feed, aka fund, the same private system that built it. And then this new system loops back by further empowering the ideology that got the whole thing started. As the study describes it, each layer reinforces the others. Ideology justifies investment. Investment captures state power. State power secures contracts. Contracts build infrastructure. Infrastructure becomes indispensable. Indispensability generates returns. Returns fund more ideology. Now, to use our favorite satanic stepbrothers, Alex Karp and Peter Thiel, as an example, we have an ideology grounded in the power of the West and the incompatibility of freedom and democracy, which led to them using venture capital to start Palantir, a company which uses advanced surveillance technology to capture state power. This power then led the state to paying them billions of dollars in contracts to further integrate Palantir into state and military infrastructure. This infrastructure has now become indispensable to the state, being used for everything from ICE raids to boat strikes, which creates further wealth for Palantir, which Karp and Thiel can then use to push their initial ideological aims. And this all makes it very clear why Karp would want to make new forms of violence constitutional, as it both furthers his ideological and financial interests. And as we see in the maps of the authoritarian stack, the important thing is that it's not just these guys. And further, it's not just different sets of isolated Silicon Valley interest. It's a coordinated network with a shared ideological apparatus working to privatize state infrastructure across the domains of data, defense, space, energy, and money, what they refer to as the foundations of democratic power. Now, the question that the study leaves us with is whether democratic societies can recognize this formation for what it is and build alternatives before the infrastructure of control becomes too deeply embedded to dislodge. It's sort of like if you're seeing someone casually and you realize that they like you more than you like them, but it's also nice to have someone to hang out with. You got to do the math of like, you know, can I get out of this before I'm too deeply embedded, before they're too deeply embedded? Because then you got to marry them. Then you're all in. And to be clear, that's not an example about how people have like liked me when I didn't like them. It's more an example about how for much of my 20s, I would get really into people and then they would dislodge me before I was too deeply embedded. That sounded sexual. I didn't mean it like that. I meant it emotionally. I didn't mean it sexually. Now, here's why this is all important. This study isn't just showing us the web of connections between various rich pieces of shit. It's literally mapping out the way in which contemporary capitalism operates. And if we're able to visualize the way the system works, well, then we actually have a chance to properly critique that system and politically organize against that system. Now, this process of trying to produce a totalizing picture of the contemporary system of power is what theorist Frederick Jameson referred to as cognitive mapping. He talks about this in the context of his work on postmodernism, which for him is just another way to describe the cultural logic of late capitalism, as the ultimate function of postmodern culture is just reinforcing the underlying logic of capitalism. Now, one particularly tricky feature of this cultural logic is that it actively resists totalization, meaning that it's increasingly difficult for us to clearly see what's really going on and almost impossible to get a clear picture of relations of power and class interest. This is important because, as Jameson sees it, if we can't identify a totalizing system, well, then we won't be able to actually critique and maybe eventually destroy that system. And this is why I find the authoritarian stack so fascinating. It gives us a clear visual map of the relations of power shaping our world. Again, this might just be me, but seeing things in a visual, mapped out, connected sense makes a lot more sense than just reading a bunch of stuff and trying to build the map in my mind. And the language of the map is important, as we can imagine the difference between visiting a new city with and without a map. You know, let's say you're dropped into the middle of London with no map, no phone, no sense of where the city ends and where it begins. You'll be struggling to find a point of orientation from within this city to help you make sense of the city as a totality. No one's going to help you, you know, because Londoners aren't just smiling and being helpful. They're just like,
just this massive fucking space here, but you're just still clocking on down the road, aren't you? Fucking move!
But let's say you instead visit this city with a detailed map. Well, you're now able to see London as a totalized structure, which allows you to not only understand where you are in relation to the city as a whole, but also how various parts of the city are connected and related. Now, for Jameson, the cultural logic of late capitalism leaves us stuck in the middle of London with no map. Not only that, because of the nature of capitalism, it's like the boundaries of the city itself are always moving, growing, adapting, changing, even like contradicting themselves. This is why Jameson describes cognitive mapping as a pedagogical political culture which seeks to endow the individual subject with some new heightened sense of its place in the global system. So basically, this way of thinking has an educational function in helping to provide a new sense of how the global system works and then where our place within that system is, which is precisely what we get in the authoritarian stack. Because trying to understand how Curtis Yarvin is related to J.D. Vance and how Vance overlaps with the aims of Mark Andreessen, but also why Elon Musk and Peter Thiel both support Trump and what all this has to do with the work of the fascist philosopher Nick Land can make you feel like you're losing your mind. You know, like someone dosed you with shrooms and dropped you into the middle of Tokyo with no map. To put it another way, our modern cultural and economic systems are incredibly alienating, making us feel a distance from ourselves, from others, and from these systems of power that explain why things are the way they are. You know, this is the type of alienation that draws some to conspiracy theory, as it promises some sort of explanation for why things are so bad. Cognitive mapping, on the other hand, can actually have a disalienating effect on us, as it enables us to actually see the existence of class relations in our society. And once we're able to represent the totality of the system of late or too late capitalism, we're able to understand our own position within that totality and then use that position as a starting point for a new critique of the system, one that might have previously felt really difficult, if not outright impossible. And this is why Jameson associates cognitive mapping with class consciousness, as dominant systems succeed precisely in as much as they're able to obfuscate our actual class positions. But once we're able to see these things, well, it's way easier to understand our own class position and then build solidarity with others in that position. So does this all just mean we just got to go to the website and look at a cool map to defeat the rise of techno-authoritarian capitalism? Yes, sadly, no. Looking at a website will not fix this one, but things like the authoritarian stack help us see the system in a way that goes beyond particular evil CEOs and politicians with their own particular ideological projects, and instead shows us the big picture of how it's all connected and how all of these nodes of power are working together. Having a cognitive map of the system is not an end in itself. Rather, it's the starting point for doing the type of analysis that can lead to political resistance and change. That is, unless you really like the vision of people like Alex Karp and Peter Thiel and Mark Andreessen. If you really like what they're up to, do nothing. Hang out. Sit around. It's all going to work out in your favor, Luke. And unlike the conspiracy theorists, studies like this actually have the research and data to back it up. Okay, so do check out the authoritarian stack. Spend some time clicking around. It's an important project. I think you can learn a lot from it. I know I did. It's also sort of like a fun computer game that teaches you about tech authoritarianism. If you're interested in learning more about Frederick Jameson, his theories, other philosophy, stuff like that, we've been looking at his work in my reading group. All those sessions are available over on my Patreon. And there is a link to that below. So, you know, click it, maybe, potentially. And also just a huge shout out to my Patreon community. You are the primary way that I fund this channel and pay people money to make things with me. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It means a lot. No, I don't take it for granted. In the meantime, I'm going to go take whatever Alex Karp was on during that interview and then walk to a bank and see if they'll give me millions of dollars to start a weapons company or something. Because that just seems like how stuff works. You take drugs and you talk fast and they give you money. And then the money, you get weapons, and then you get some more money. I don't know. Like, what am I? Why not? Why not at this point?
We will decide, AI and the ability to implement it on the battlefield primarily, will decide the values, i.e. the norms, the laws, and the spirit of the laws that are imposed upon us across the globe.
See you guys next time. Have a good one.